I'm Christine Dean, and this is live from Studio A. And some exciting events going on up in Grand Marais tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday. And it is the Unplugged event that they've been doing for the last few years at the North House Folk School up there. And the Mountain Stage program that you enjoy here on Saturday mornings on KUMD is taping programs tonight and tomorrow night. And the shows start at 7 o'clock. And we are very happy to welcome one of the performers from tomorrow night's show, Judith Owen, to our studio. Welcome, Judith.
Hello there.
And, you know, I was looking back and I knew you'd been here before, and it's been a while. It's been about 8 years since you were here before.
I know. Well, it's not often that I come up to Duluth, you see. You can obviously tell with this accent that there's a very little reason I would come up here, except, of course, I tour. In fact, Lee Sklar, who's sitting here right by me, I'm very lucky to be in your Studio A with Leland Sklar today. But we just did a tour of America, but we did not get to Duluth, sadly. I know, but here we are. And I hear you've had a ragingly hot summer. I don't believe you for 1 minute
always.
Because I'm cold now.
Yeah,
we had
two.
Oh,
from Duluth.
Yes.
Lee's mother is from Duluth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my grandmother lived here.
Wow.
You know how you know that Lee's forebears or something were from Duluth is the fact that he literally wears a t-shirt in your fine weather. And I have two jackets on.
I thought you were going to say it's because he knows to have lots of facial hair to keep him warm.
Well, that too.
I have like an R60
that
factor.
Too.
I get a kickback from the government every year.
Meanwhile, the last time I was here was winter. No, I'm so thrilled that we've been searching around wondering where his family were and where they lived and everything today. But last time I was here, honestly, it was so cold. It was the middle of winter, and I thought I was going to die of cold.
Yeah, not a good time to visit.
Choice.
Yeah, well, this is better.
Oh, it's gorgeous,
and Grand Marais is also lovely. So I take it you have not made it up the shore yet.
No,
up there. Okay, so you're going to enjoy that.
No,
as well.
I just can't wait. This is fantastic.
Wonderful. Well, Judith, you and Lee are going to be playing tomorrow night at the North House Folk School, and that show starts at 7 o'clock. Also features David Lindley, Pertner Sandstone, Carrie Newcomer, and Bill Miller. And it sounds like you guys are on at 7:30.
Yeah, indeed, yes.
So, and just the two of you, or you have
just the two of us?
All right.
Yeah, I think we make a perfect little package here. We've been working together. We've been touring since my latest CD and my record came out, Ebb and Flow. So came out a little earlier this year, and we've just been touring in America, in Britain. We're about to go to Europe, and then back here again. So it's been pretty full on, and it's also been with the rest of the band. I mean, the reason I made this record is it's a love letter to the 70s. It's a love letter to Laurel Canyon and to that era that really influenced me so much. James Taylor, Carol King, Joni Mitchell, and of course these wonderful men, Leland Sklar, Russ Kunkel, Waddy Wachtel, they've all played with these people and in fact were the original players. So to me, this was the most incredible dream come true that the people in rainy old Britain, who in rainy old Wales and then rainy old London, who I was listening to as a kid, this is who I ended up being able to pull together and make a record with. It's really a remarkable thing for me.
Well, I want to hear a song, and then I want to come back and find out how you pulled that all together. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about the latest album, Ebb and Flow. What do you guys want to start with here?
Starting with your favorite.
Yeah.
Because I'm very clever. You see, I like currying favor wherever I go. So I said, what is the song that you'd most like to hear? And it turns out that it is the most kind of Elton John troubadour period, because, of course, he was a big troubadour guy in the 70s too, so influenced by American music. And this is a song called One in a Million, which is basically about how everybody seems to look at how everybody else is doing and judges themselves, their lives, on how other people appear to be doing. So we always think that everybody has been invited to the party and we're left there on our own. Well, the truth is there is no party. And even if there was, would you really want to go? It's a grass is always greener. And I struggle with this. We all struggle with living in the moment and actually enjoying the life that you have. So this is One in a Million. Old friend, what you been doing with your life then? With all of those plans you figured out back in those high school days. Now you've come clean, how much you've struggled for that one dream. Chasing your rainbow wasn't what it seemed, it didn't all go your way. And you hurt when others were growing, you're still pale. When others are glowing, you feel stale just watching your gossip TV. believe me. Don't live looking out on the other side. Don't live thinking everybody's got it easier. Even if the sun is shining where they're standing, you know you're one in a million to go. Go out and live your life, 'cause you're a big joke. The way you've been moving like a slow poke, the way you've been living, you're just plain heartbroken. You're starting to fade away, and you're a landslide, crumbling slowly on the inside, riding it bareback 'cause you've got your pride, and they'll never see you sway. And each day somebody's winning, and it makes you feel like you're only beginning. So don't live looking out on the other side. Don't live thinking everybody's got it easier. Even if the grass looks greener where they're standing, you know you're one in a million to go. Go out and live. Got it easier, even if the sun is shining where they're standing. You know you're one in a million to go. Go out and live your own life. You're one in a million to go. Go out and live.
That is Judith Owen along with Lee Sklar live from Studio A, a tune from Judith's latest album, Ebb and Flow, One in a Million. Well, yeah, I definitely think that's a great universal message to that song. But you said, you know, it's something you need to hear. Did you have yourself in mind when you were doing it?
Everything I write about is about me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't pretend not to be the narcissist that I am. But the good thing about knowing that you have those narcissistic tendencies, I think, is also that I can't write about myself unless I know other people struggle with the same thing. I know, you know, I'm a typically self-loathing singer-songwriter. I mean, there's no way around it. I'm a, you know, a beautifully damaged person, as I've decided to call myself. But ultimately, when I see other people struggle with the same things I struggle with, that's when I know that I'm not alone. And I think most of us go through life feeling very isolated and lonely, because you do feel like you're the only one struggling with this. We're all struggling with this. Some people just put on a better game face. Some people, you know, I remember the first time I said to my husband, oh my God, those people seem so happy, and we're always arguing, we're always bickering. Well, those particular people divorced, I think, about a year or 2 years later. And it's all about that thing. It's like what you perceive to be, you know, having a great life, having a great time. It's not like that when you're in it. It's not like that for anybody. Mm-hmm. We're all struggling to get from A to B. So I think being present, being in the moment, is a very, very hard thing. And I'm a real mood swinging gal. And, I was actually just on Huffington Post doing a live blog with Sean Colvin about both our struggles with the black dog with depression, and we were both, you know, talking about how the hardest thing is to be present, not to be either regretting the past or catastrophizing about the future. But I think everybody has that. You don't have to have depression to not be able to savor the moment, because we're always so full of worries and stress and anxiety about what we've screwed up or what's coming that we're scared of. And life passes you by. So that's, you know, it's a long answer, I know, but that's the reason, the universal reason I wrote this song. And I don't think there's anything that I ever write about that doesn't come from me in the first place, but ultimately it's never about just me. It's about things definitely that I see are shared and that I know other people struggle with.
Well, I haven't seen the thing with you and Sean Colvin, but that sounds really fascinating.
It was like a mental health week that we were doing for Huffington Post live. And that was a wonderful thing that they did. Truly
well,
great.
And there's kind of this strange conception of artists that you almost need that darkness to be an artist, but I don't think that's necessarily true.
It's such a frightening lie because we all think as artists that we do need to be dark because we'll never write another song ever again. The truth is that when you have that kind of darkness, when you have that kind of illness, you will never not be able to write a song. The truth is when you're ill and when you're in the grip, like everybody is in this world, when you're in the grip of the illness, you can't write anything. You can't leave a chair. You can't wash. Forget being creative. So it's something that people rely upon because they're worried that if they get better, they'll lose. You know, we're always scared. Writers and creative people, you're always scared you'll lose your muse, you'll lose the ability to write. But the truth is, I feel like I have an endless fountain of sadness and of things that I know and of life experience to draw upon. It's not like I am miss happy. You know, I have a very alive face and alive front, but inside I'm a very dark person, and both things are good to have. They balance me out, but I'm so much better and finer, I believe, a performer and a musician, for being well and having sought out help and really, really dealt with this over the years. And I would never want to be, and I speak for all the people out there who struggle with this, there is no worse feeling than the numbness, the absolute numbness of living with this illness.
Well, and I think, you know, at this time, just after Robin Williams' death and things, a lot of people are talking about this, and it's great that it's being talked about.
I am so glad because I knew Robin, and we weren't close friends, but we were people who every so often would get together at parties and see each other, and he was a truly wonderful man and a truly gifted individual and a joy, but I knew, as somebody who puts on a game face every time I go anywhere, anytime I do anything, you know, you can see that. You could see who he was and what he had and what he struggled with. And it comes out in drinking, comes out in drugs, it comes out in many ways for all of us, and different ways that you deal with these to self-medicate. But I wish that hadn't happened. I can only say that the positives that come from it is that people actually are recognizing this and acknowledging that it's not just, you know, this isn't a thing that just affects people who are, you know, well-known and stars. Those are the people you hear about. It affects one in four people in this,
right,
in this world. And that means that there's a lot of people out there struggling and alone and lonely who are trying to get through it by themselves with no help. And all I can say to that, and that's what I said in HuffPost, and that's what Sean and I were saying, was that the most important thing is to find like-minded people who are also, who know what you're talking about. Because it's very hard to explain to healthy people, as when I say healthy, I mean as in, you know, mentally healthy people who don't have this illness. It's very hard to describe this to people who've never experienced it. It's very hard to understand it when you've never experienced it. And it's very, very frightening for the families and loved ones around people who have it. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful that people are talking about it this openly. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about the album, and now we have Lee Sklar here. He's one of the men that you mentioned earlier that joined you.
Lee Sklar's beard has actually grown longer since I started talking.
Hairline's recede. It's actually plate tectonics is taking place.
Oh, I see. Other planets are being created while I spoke.
Right here.
No,
in our studio.
His beard was almost in his strings. Now it's down to his knees. It's a great thing.
I think I'm going to have to post a photo on Facebook for people to see this beard.
To understand this.
So Russ Kunkel and Waddy Wachtel, and very familiar names, and these are people that worked on albums in the 70s and throughout the years. Carol King, James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, some of those people.
Yeah, it goes on and on.
Did you know these guys, or did you say, you know what, I want to work with these guys?
No, I don't. I'm maybe dark, but I'm ballsy. That's all I can say. I'm sure I'm allowed to say that on the radio. Ethan Duluth, we know what that means.
They're progressive.
They are progressive. Yeah. So, by the way, I went to Duluth. What is it called? Duluth, the place with
the trading company.
Trading company.
Yeah.
And I saw my next record. It's the greatest thing. It said, "Stronger than an angry beaver." Okay, so it's about the trousers, but fire hose trousers. I'm going to actually call my next record Judith Owen, "Stronger than an angry beaver." I think it's some anyway.
Wonderful.
So I digress. But I knew of these guys because I'd grown up, like I said, adoring this music. It had such an influence upon me. It meant so much to hear this music that was so interior and yet universal, and it married beautiful melody with exquisite and thought-provoking lyrics. I mean, this was a remarkable time, and it was that period in California and Laurel Canyon. I mean, that was it. That was just like this incredible time. So I had met Lee through my wonderful husband, who's, I have to mention because I'm so very proud of him, but, the wonderful Harry Shearer.
And that's part of your contract, your marital contract.
What it is part of your contract.
He must
I
be
have
mentioned.
To mention him in every radio show that I do. It's in the contract.
Yeah.
It's in the prenup. Harry already knew Lee, and Lee had worked with Harry a couple of times, and I was determined to meet Lee because, of course, I was a big fan, massive. And I met Lee, and then I thought, this is what I'm going to do, and I wanted to do something that was very, very much a throwback to the joy I felt hearing this music for the first time when I was a kid, and my father had just passed away, and I thought, I want to do something very life-affirming. I want to do something that's a bit of a dream come true. And so I asked Lee, and then I reached out to Russ and Waddy, and it helped that Lee was already now a big supporter of mine and could tell them that it wasn't, it wasn't rubbish. It was the kind of music. No, exactly. No, you can't say that on the radio. That's awful.
We don't understand that in America, so it's okay.
That's all right. Onanism.
It's so British.
We're awful together. We are just the worst. So he just brings out the worst
to
me.
I'm doing all I can not to jump in.
No, you're lovely jumping in. If you could just
be
quiet.
Keep talking.
I'd really appreciate this. So I asked them, and they said yes, and then it was live in the round, in a studio, one, two takes at the most. They'd listen to the song, they'd watch what I was doing, watch my inversions, the vibe of it, and then we'd go in and we'd record it, and it was like, it was real old school, everything was old school. In Sunset Sound, which was up there just by Laurel Canyon, on Sunset, the same vibe, all those amazing records that were made there. And I kept it very, very, very authentic, because that's what I wanted, and I am very proud of the outcome, and I love that I've made a record with these wonderful guys and these legendary players, and that they've been such a joy to be with, to tour with, to be around. It's been a remarkable year for me. Remarkable.
Wonderful. You've done a couple of covers on this album, a few covers of some of the people that these guys worked with in the past too, haven't you?
Well, yes, but I did a cover of Carole King's "Might as Well Rain Until September." I'm not somebody who likes covering songs the way that they were written. I don't see the point of that, because that's been done, and it's usually been done the best by the person who did it originally. I do like to turn things on their ears. So I took, for example, I'm kind of known in some way, I guess, for sort of taking the biggest, most testosterone rock songs and taking the cod out of the piece, shall we say? So I took things like Smoke on the Water, and I made it into like a very sexy female bossa nova. And actually, the members of Deep Purple just loved it. That's the good thing about it. And then Soundgarden's Black Hole Sun. So when I came to doing the Carole King's, it was a Bobby Socks, a 1950s song. So I made that into a really very sexy, lusty thing. Very, very slow and gorgeous. And then I went back to Britain after finishing doing this record, and I was doing a summer show, and it was I was pulling all my favorite summer songs, because like you here in Duluth, I think you had a real summer this year, but we in Britain have
a little bit of
2 days of summer, and we really have to run with them 100%. So so I'd done this show for all summer songs, and they're usually very unlikely songs that I would cover. And one of the things that we wheel out every single summer is Mungo Jerry's "In the Summertime." I hope you know that song here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's universal, obviously. It's wheeled out every year, and then we wheel it back away, and then we bring out Slade for Christmas. So I decided, because I was still in that kind of Laurel Canyon frame of mind, I thought, I've got to do a song that is really encapsulates and has that feel of that Laurel Canyon period. And I asked myself the very important question, which has become my life's mantra: what would Joni do? And I thought what Joni would do would be to do this with this song. And she'd sleep with the band and she'd light up. But actually, what Joni would do, and she's my idol, my goddess, she would do something that turned that song on its head. It wouldn't be about, you know, young boys lusting after girls. It would be about sort of a rather mature woman such as myself with a very deep voice staring lustily at the gorgeous men on the beach instead. So I kind of thought that would be like that. And thinking about her own, you know, teens and throwback to life. So I turned it around and did a Joni on it, as it were. So that was how In the Summertime began. And then we did other songs following that, Summer Breeze, Summer Nights from Greece, which is one of my favorites. They're all out right now in a summer EP.
Yeah, yeah.
So People of Duluth, mm-hmm. if you wish to hold on by the that claw onto the end of summer, as twere, mm-hmm. then please, yeah, check out this summer EP. But
we actually did we had a pretty short summer as well. In fact, back in May, there were ice chunks still floating on that big lake out there.
It was, May.
Yes. Yeah, yes. The end of May. So it was a brutal winter.
You know, I drove past one of your many beautiful houses just up by the, you know, the gorgeous kind of, I guess they're Victorians and Edwardian houses. And I was looking at it thinking longingly, one of them just looked incredible. It was for sale. And you just completely, you've stopped that dream now. Dead. You stopped it dead. I am a very white, pale woman, very Welsh person, but we don't do ice chunks in Wales. No.
And that's probably a good
rain
policy.
Rain the sheep. That's pretty much it.
We're stuck in L.A. in perpetual summer.
Oh, it's so hot.
Yeah.
There's no water, no getting away from this heat and drought that we're going through.
Yeah, while we were getting dumped on, you were getting a drought.
Yeah,
so
it's really...
Well, you just,
but
I don't know.
Issues.
Never
but,
perfection.
But can I just repeat the words? Ice float.
Yes.
That's all I want to say.
Well, since we talked about In the Summertime, yeah. You guys want to do that one?
I think we should. All I right. think let's all cheer ourselves up here, yes. and just remember what summer was like for those 2 days prior, post ice flow, and how it will be again next year for a couple of days. Here we are. This is In the Summertime. One, two, three. Yeah. Ooh. In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up, you can almost touch the sky. When the weather is right, you've got woman on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, and go out and see what you can find. If her daddy's rich, take her out for a meal. If her daddy's poor, then just do what you feel. Speed along the lane, darling, do a turn in 25. When the sun goes down, you can make it in Italy by. Cause you're not bad, you're not dirty, darling. You're not a me. You just love everybody and you do exactly what you feel. You go fishing, you go flying, sometimes you go swimming in the sea. You see the last for living, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's your philosophy. La 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 la. When the winter's hit, darling, you feel just fine. Bring a bottle, wear your bright clothes, cause soon it will be summertime. Cause you're not bad, you're not dirty, darling. You're not me. You just love everybody and you do exactly what you feel. You go fishing.
ocean you go flying, sometimes you go swimming by the sea. You see the life's a living, life's for living, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's your philosophy. In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can switch right up, almost touch the sky. When the weather is right, you've got woman on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, and go out and see what you can find. Have a drink, have a drive, and go out and see what you can find. Have a drink, have a drive, and go out and see what you can find. Yeah, yeah. La 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 la, come along with me. La 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 la, come along with me. Oh la la la, come along with me. La 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 la, come along with me. Oh 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 oh.
That is Judith Owen, along with Lee Sklar, live from Studio A, and her version of In the Summertime, reimagined, as you always do on those covers. Judith, always fun to hear your take on a tune like that. And that again, is from your latest album, Ebb and Flow. Now, there's a couple of albums, or songs, I should say, on this album. You mentioned earlier that your dad passed away before before you produced the album or did the album, right? But one of the songs honors him, right?
Yeah, yes, it's called I Would Give Anything. And again, it's of course about him and the situation you go through when you lose somebody. And that might be, you know, it doesn't have to mean that they pass away. It can also mean when somebody leaves. When things end, I think, again, there's that thing where people always say, make sure that when somebody leaves the house, you always say you love them. The last time you see somebody, you know, we don't. We rarely do. And when somebody is ill as he was, and I knew he was dying, the amount of people that said, make sure you say all the things you need to say, all the things that you want to say. Well, you know, I knew it. I knew everything. It still doesn't mean that you can or that you will. You say as much as you're able, and you try to do the best job you possibly can. But I don't think there's anybody since that and post him dying, I met so many people who were racked with the same feelings, the same sadness, the same loss and guilt that they hadn't said all the things they'd wanted to. And it's one of the reasons that we survive in life is that you can't always face it until it happens. It's one of the ways we get through is by not accepting. Denial is a very, very strong thing that human beings have in order to get through. And it is a powerful thing, and it's about self-preservation. And so I met a lot of people afterwards who felt the same way that I did, which was, you know, if you had 5 more minutes, if you had 1 more minute, you would say exactly what you wanted. Because time, again, it's like we think we have all the time in the world. Of course, we don't. But it's a very tricky one. But again, I think it's a very universal song. It's a very, very universal experience. And it is called I Would Give Anything. And it's just to be able to say those things. He knew. People know. You know. You don't have to say it. It's good if you can. I said plenty. But there's always going to be things. You know, that's the point. That's the point. And that's the same with the end of a relationship. It's the same when things go wrong. It's the same when people leave. The things you wish you said.
Mm-hmm. And your dad was an opera singer, right?
He was an opera singer. And that's what I grew up with. He was an opera singer for 35 years at Royal Opera House Covent Garden in London, which is truly one of the great opera houses of the world. So from age 5 onwards, we left Wales, went to London. From age 5 onwards, I was pretty much going to see every dress rehearsal every weekend at the Opera House. So I like to say I started at the top and then I've been working my way down ever since because I really did feel, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, I was seeing, you know, Pavarotti and hanging out with him and saying hello in the canteen, you know, and having, you know, in, when they were having their meals in between rehearsals and Domingo, and I was seeing all these I was in this fantasy world, and the overture would begin, and I'd be crying, and then there'd be love, and I'd be joyful, and the music moved me so much. And then, of course, everyone dies because it's opera, and I do think that it's it has such a huge effect upon I think the aspect of my writing and my music, which is, I mean, because this couldn't be further away from opera if you tried, but it allowed me to connect emotionally, as in it didn't make me afraid of feeling musically. So I'm not afraid of writing about hard things, the hardest things, that I'm not. I always felt that if a piece of music made me cry, it was the greatest gift anybody could ever give me. And I've always felt that if somebody comes up to me after a show and says, that song made me cry, made me think about, you know, whoever, made me think about that, my life, that is the greatest compliment I could ever be given. Because it's giving the listener permission to feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what music is. That's why it's universal. That's why it is mm-hmm. so magnificent. It mm-hmm. gives you permission to feel mm-hmm. everything.
Well, I'm curious. Last time you were here, I was kind of listening back to that interview, and you were talking about all the 78s that your dad had around the
yes.
house, and just the variety of music. What did he think about the kind of popular music that you were kind of inspired by for this album? That it sounds like, you know, was your kind of music in your youth, and
funnily enough,
sometimes you kind of make that break from your parents and like something that they might not. But
yes, and the thing is that there's enough classical chords and classical, I mean, less so with this record probably, but in the past I have a very classical nature in the way that I write songs. My father became a very big fan of mine. Funnily enough, it wasn't a million miles away from him, because even though he was an opera singer and was a very classical musician, it's him and me and my sister in the car driving around in summer listening to James Taylor as a kid. That's what we were listening to in the car. And, you know, Aretha
so he liked that.
Oh, he was
too.
A huge jazz fan.
Yep,
he was
yep, yep.
huge blues.
So that's
R&B.
What I was curious about, like what his musical taste was.
Jelly Roll Morton,
mm-hmm.
Albert Ammons.
Mm-hmm.
Before I knew, I think I said this last time, I didn't know he had that collection until I collected, when I came to California, I started collecting my own piano-centric 78s. And then I said to him, you know, I knew he had 78s. I didn't know what they were until I went back and said, oh my God, I've been collecting all these things. And he just said, he was speechless, and he showed me what it was that he had the 78s of.
Wow.
It was exactly the same artists.
Wow.
My father, we were unbelievably bonded music. I think that really was our bond. And there are many songs that I've written that are very Welsh and very melancholy. That's who I am, really, at the heart of it all, is a melancholy person. And so for my father, that absolutely meant the world to him. And I think that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I still listen to classical music more than anything else, and I always will, because it is like salve for the soul. And I think people don't realize how much they hear classical music, whether it be in films, whether it be in advertising, whether it be in football games, whatever it might be. I mean, I think people are not quite aware of how huge an effect it has upon all mm-hmm. of us. And then again, you know, I need to hear my Aretha. I need to hear the music that makes me bounce off the walls and jump for joy. I need that too.
Mm-hmm.
I need to hear my jazz. I need to hear my R&B. I need to hear mm-hmm. gospel. I need all those things. But still, I have to go back to the
thing. So not a purist in any way.
Oh, gosh, I can't bear purists.
Right.
If you don't understand that there's no difference between... We're talking about an infinite number of notes. We're talking about an infinite number of... chords. We're talking about music, which is used in a different, you know, I mean, I don't know of a great jazz musician who doesn't come from a classical place, because that's where they all start. That's where everybody starts. I mean, not everybody, but I mean, you know, you look at somebody like Oscar Peterson, you look at somebody like Wynton Marsalis. We're talking about people who come from classical musician in the first place. It is the building blocks of everything. So music is music. You shouldn't be a snob about it. And you shouldn't think that it's not for you just because it doesn't fit into what you think you should be listening to. Everything, if it affects you and it makes you feel something deep and good and wonderful, that's enough.
Which kind of reminds me, you've worked with Richard Thompson in the past, and on that, what is it, 1,000 years?
1,000 years of popular music. Popular music. Yes, if only it was 100. It wouldn't have been such a long show. But yeah, I did 1,000 years of popular music with Richard.
Features Richard Thompson singing a Britney Spears song. And it's
so I did it again. We had the best time, and we did all sorts of amazing songs together on that. We start with the Gregorian charts, almost chants, and from, you know, sort of medieval music all the way up to Britney Spears. And it was a truly wonderful experience being the lead female. I mean, being and Deborah Topigan on percussion and me on piano. And it was a remarkable tour. And since then, he's done something called Cabaret of Souls, which I'm very, very fortunate because he wrote all the female parts for me in mind. And so I got to be a real ham because I did originally start out being an actress because I didn't want to compete with my father. It's always hard to be a musician and to be in the same world, and it wasn't the same, but you know what I mean? It's hard to be the child of somebody who's very successful and you're also a musician. So it was always a private joy to me. So I started out being an actress, but none of it's been wasted because then I got to be an absolute ham on stage and be a variety of really awful women, all of whom were in limbo and had to audition in sort of like a America's Got Talent type way in front of the gatekeeper to heaven and hell, which was actually played by my fantastic husband, Harry. There you go. There it goes. Two mentions. I think that's too much. I skip tomorrow. He's not being mentioned at all. So anyway, yeah, very, very fortunate. The people I've got to work with in my life have been, you know, Richard's probably the most. Cassandra Wilson, Katie Lang, Kev Moe, just amazing people that I've been very fortunate to collaborate with, and it just continues. You know, you're meant to learn; you don't stop. That's what I love about Richard. He's a musicologist and a true enthusiast at heart, and he knows that you're not meant to stand still creatively. You're meant to keep learning until you drop. That's the job.
Well, we have time for one more. What do you guys want to?
Well, I'm
going to
do the song that you I described about my father. I would give anything. I think that's a beautiful way to finish this day that we have here, this minute, these few minutes before the ice flows come back. And I think that it's I think it really sums up the ebb and flow really well as well, because it has that kind of. It has that vibe, that Laurel Canyon vibe to it. And thank you so much for having us on, by the way. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Great to be back.
You guys are delightful.
Time seems like a good friend and you don't know what you have till one day you go and lose it, taking life for granted, never thinking it might end. It's just the way we all get through it. And God forgive me all the times I held back from telling you how much you meant, and now it's too late, too late. I would give anything if you walked through that door. I would give anything if you walked through that door again. I could take a plane, I could just fly into the blue. I could live life with distractions, but when I went to sleep, I knew I'd still see you. So I listened to your voicemail, to the messages you left, because it makes me think you're still here. Look at all your photographs, to the face I love, because it's almost like heaven.
darling, you'll hear me. And God knows this house feels so empty today. And every lonely room reminds me that you've gone away. I would give anything if you walked through that door. I would give anything if you walked through that door. If you walked through that door, I would give anything if you walked through the door again.
That is Judith Owen, along with Lee Sklar, live from Studio A, and another one from her album Ebb and Flow. Well, thank you so much, guys.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Really a pleasure. And again, they are performing tomorrow night at the North House Folk School's Unplugged Concert. That is also a taping for the Mountain Stage, and I think I heard that's the show is actually going to air in October on the radio, which we carry it here Saturday mornings on KUMD. So tomorrow night, they are taking the stage. The show starts at 7 o'clock. I think with Bill Miller, then you guys are on, and then Carrie Newcomer, Pertner Sandstone, and David Lindley. And it's also going on tonight, starting at 7. So more information on both nights on our website, KUMD.org. Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Chris Harwood, Rick McLean, and Aaron Welch. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Arts. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.